Oh, you're gonna lose your voice.
Yeah. Week, do you know how long I do videos?
So you're good.
That is loud.
Oh, we can turn you down.
Yeah, you can turn me down a little bit too.
Okay.
Oh, first things. What's the policy on swearing?
No swearing.
The
you don't
the most?
You don't clip that.
No, but I'll just have to check it. We don't. Our channel to tell.
I'll do my best. I can guarantee it. My best efforts will be like filthy rags.
I was going to say that. Can you, I'm not.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
I'll the worst try, language I'll try not to be intense to happen.
The worst language comes from me.
Yeah, it's that's so far. The guy who's saying no swearing.
Can you turn my headphones down? It's really loud.
Okay, I'm trying. Let's go this way. How are they now? Oh, yeah. You're okay, how's it now?
Test 1, 2, 1, 2.
Now you can't hear yourself.
Ah, right? That's nice.
Is it better?
Yeah, thank you.
I want to be able
bring,
to hear myself.
Bring your microphone up a little, Job, so your mouse is going right in the center.
Like this?
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Gotcha.
All right.
I like to go deaf, so I have all the headsets. All right, we can jump right into this. So,
yep.
I think we're welcoming Job and Paul. And Job is actually from far, far away.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's actually traveled the seas to come here. How long was your trip to get to us, and where did you come from, Job?
I came from below sea level in the Netherlands, and I traveled about 11 hours to California, and then another 6.5 hours to Tucson. So
really?
I'm
by
glad
vehicle?
To be sitting down.
Oh, you guys drove. You drove from California to Tucson?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I was like, that's a terrible flight. Like, okay, I get it.
And we have Paul, who was in our previous one, Paul Vedderclay, but you're gonna have to reintroduce him. I mean, you gave him like a really long introduction this last time.
We called him the pink unicorn.
Yeah, can we start with that?
He's wearing a pink shirt, which that didn't dawn on me, so.
It's kind of pink.
It's a reddish, pinkish hue,
it's got
as George Costanza would say. Yeah, so Paul, our introduction will come, but Paul's YouTube channel, it has engaged with Jordan Peterson and questions around faith and philosophy and sociology and things, and especially in reference to Jordan Peterson. And on that YouTube channel is where you two met. Is that correct? Yeah, where you and Job met. And so I'm especially curious about the relationship that you two built. And then, Job, your story is unique as to where you are. You're a church attender now. Describe what you said about like where you're at with faith last night at the meetup I went to. That, you described it in an interesting way.
It described that. And then what I would love is that the two of you would sort of tell your story together without us sort of interrupting you.
Yeah.
And to see just kind of the relationship and experience of that. So go for it, Job.
Where I'm at with faith. It's so difficult. I could consider myself solidly a classical theist at this point, in the sense that seems undeniable, as far as I understand it philosophically. Edward Fraser has been a huge help in solidifying that, because the whole fideism never really seemed to grab me. As far as Christianity goes, well, I'm going through all the motions. I attend church, I pray daily, as Peterson would say, I act as if. But it also, sometimes I wonder if I'm just a Christian in denial, because where by now is that barrier of, well, at this point, the best way I can explain the resurrection is that if it actually happened, but that shoe hasn't really dropped, like the classical theism thing definitely has integrated. I remember that well, like, oh, God exists. Oh no, what? Mm. So, but the whole, well, Jesus was actually the Son of God. Okay, so how does that work? How does the resurrection work? But I don't know. I mean, it doesn't. Let me find the words. It doesn't, I can only come up with the Dutch word in my head. Sorry, it's been a long trip.
I want the Dutch word.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Het stuit niet meer op innerlijke strijd.
Makes sense.
Which means that it doesn't John, help me out here. It doesn't cause inner conflict anymore when I think about it. Like, okay, that seems to just be the case. So in that degree, the whole island of unexamined atheism I sort of inhabited seems to have drifted away further and further to where I can't really see it anymore. And sometimes it's terrifying, but on the other hand, it sort of seemed to have happened to me to a degree. And I'm going to go on a tangent if you don't stop me. What was the question again?
Well, really, no, that you're doing a great job. When you met Paul online, though, a couple years ago, you were not here.
How did you meet?
Yeah.
How did you guys even, like, become acquainted with each
other? I got to make a little harp noise and go back in time for that to happen.
Let's do it.
All right. Paul, you want to take part of this?
Okay. Well, I started making videos when I found the work of Jordan Peterson, and I noticed that people in the comment sections on Reddit were saying things like, I was a big Sam Harris fan, and I started listening to Jordan Peterson, and, you know, I'm still an atheist, but I'm interested in the Bible, and I've kind of been thinking about checking out church. And I wondered, what's going on? So I started listening to Jordan Peterson more in depth, and I was exploring YouTube a little bit through a friend at church, and I was reading Neil Postman, thinking about what's the intersection, this rise of Jordan Peterson, this impact that he's having on people, what is causing that? As a minister, I wanted to know that because I was not having that impact on people. Jordan Peterson was renting out a theater in Toronto and selling it out, you know, at $40 a pop, 600 people, and good friends of mine who I know are outstanding pastors have plenty of empty chairs in church on Sunday. And here's this psychologist rambling for 2 hours about the Bible.
Rambling.
Yeah.
Rambling.
They think our sermons are long.
That's right. Yeah. And the pastor, I go 25 minutes and people start looking at their watches. And it's like, what is going on with this guy? So I decided to make a YouTube video about it, or a couple of YouTube videos about it, and people started watching it. And then I started getting attention, and people would start writing to me and asking questions on email, wanting to talk to me in person. And I get a letter from, I actually start getting some interest from the Netherlands, which to me was quite funny because the Christian Reformed Church has deep roots in the Netherlands.
Back to the home.
That's
the
right.
Homeland, yeah.
And the Netherlands is always, well, it's this godless place that after the Second World War rejected God, on and on. That's the reputation amongst the immigrants who left. But then I get a letter from Job, and Job's like, and Job was fairly early on, and he's like, hey, can we have a conversation?
I apologize for something. You keep saying letter, and when you say letter,
or email.
Okay, just check. I just want to make sure, because sometimes imagine you go out to your mailbox and it's a mail. You're sorting.
Written in quill ink.
From the Netherlands.
That's how everyone in the Netherlands writes.
Yeah. The whole wax seal.
Guy rides up on a horse.
Yeah.
Wearing wooden shoes. It's all there. The whole, yeah.
No, I got to pop a needle in that fantasy. So I got to get into a bit of background. I was raised in the Bible Belt of the Netherlands.
Does that exist?
Yeah, the Netherlands has a Bible Belt. You can see it on the map. It's part of it are below sea level. Some of it are a bit above sea level.
Interesting.
I'm in the part of below sea level. What that means is quite a conservative town. I went to a school called School with the Bible, which means that, you know, you can't say, oh, geez, that'll get you detention.
Yeah.
I'll be upfront. I never believed. Like, to me, it was just, it never took. I mean, the stories were interesting, but it didn't take. And so the school was just, it irritated me. And, you know, I had to go to church until I was 18, which is sort of the deal that my parents figured, like, well, you're living in our household. So you know, you got to go to church. So I usually had trouble staying awake. So I'm just trying to illustrate my relationship with the church when I was younger.
Sounds familiar.
My dad was involved with church, but and this was a Reformed church, so, you know, sort of loose. You could, in summer, you could wear shorts, for instance. You know, it wasn't a big deal. My mother was not involved with church, although in a sense she would write the the weekly letter of church news. So she was involved that way, which she wouldn't attend herself. But we'd have discussions when I was young about, you know, why do I have to go here? I don't believe any of it. Well, you live in our house, and it's, you know, part of your heritage, and you're for your grandparents, and you should at least respect it. Well, and of course, you know, when you're at a certain age, it's just, oh, that just makes you more resented.
Yeah.
But it interested me because the church did have a youth group where we would come together when we were in our 20s and we'd discuss things, and we'd bring this sort of like a meetup, really, before there were meetups, and we'd have, somebody would have to pick a subject. So I would say, okay, let's discuss the problem of evil. You know, I'd try to bring in the heavy things that I try to figure out. So I can't really say it didn't ever interest me. At least the philosophical questions that it presented interested me. But I otherwise figured, yeah, it's just something that we as humans should eventually leave behind.
Where were you getting your philosophical muscle exercised? Was this in school, or were you online at this juncture? Where were you feeding your interest in philosophy?
This was in the time when you were online, nobody should pick up the phone because then you were in trouble. So, I mean,
dial-up days. Yeah. So
I remember those days.
Nothing of that.
So no dedicated line for internet.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So that's a good question. I had some books. My dad was a teacher. We had a library in town that I'd go to, but. I mean, I didn't really have any real in-depth knowledge. I just, you know, grabbed things where I could find them.
And these were the questions you were asking that
well,
led you down these trails, yeah.
Well, according to, and this goes on to my youth, but okay, I was diagnosed with dysthymic depression when I was about 11.
Okay.
I was in child therapy, and, you know, according to my mom, she said, oh, you would ask questions when you were like 11, like, why are we here? What's the point of all of this? Those are kind of weird questions for a kid to ask, but I didn't understand any of it. Mm. And I was bullied heavily, and I just didn't understand why people would treat each other that way. Didn't make any sense. So I was at least running on some sort of expectation of justice in the world, which is kind of interesting coming from my background. But anyway, I grew older, and as you grow older, people tend to sort of, we tend to grow up a bit more. So, you know, we tend to get past college, the bullying stops, you build a life, you settle, you marry. But I was otherwise an entrenched atheist, pretty much anti-theist. Again, if we lose this stuff, we'd be good, right? You know?
Right. This has been part of the problem. This theism has been poisoning us. It'd be kind of where you were at.
Right. Well, and my depression was still pretty happily residing in my head.
Yeah.
In the sense that I could actually give it a location in my head where it, you know, that negativity would sit, which, okay, the rules were not to swear. So it would basically manifest as a voice that would tell me things that I can't say on the air. So, you know, just F and kill yourself. Just end it already. Like, why are you here? Very much still those thoughts I had when I was 11. Like, why are you here? Just end it already. Because why are you going to get some more suffering? So, you know, what's the point? And, I mean, yet I was married, but my wife was, you know, she knew this about me, and we'd have discussion. Like, why are you not lying awake thinking about death? I'd ask her, and she's like, oh, I just don't think about it.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, I envied that. I tend to currently mention a lot of things that seem disjointed because otherwise the story becomes so long. But
well, how'd you end up? So in you're in that kind of space. Somewhere in there, you.
I'm trying to get there.
Yeah, you start listening to Paul Vanderclough.
Yeah, I need some background. So long story short, when I was about, let's say 34, 35, I'm 37 now, I tried to once again fix that voice in my head by taking stoicism.
Yeah.
Okay, if I can just disconnect from the things I can't influence, maybe that will help. I started listening to podcasts, started reading Marcus Aurelius, and this was after I had a long stint with Zen Buddhism and all the sorts of Buddhism where I just kind of tried to deal with the suffering. And I started journaling, and I started to think a lot about the virtue ethics of Aristotle, started reading the old Greeks, started reading Seneca, and at some point I was sitting at work as a computer programmer, and I Googled or YouTubed virtue ethics, because I figured I'd listen to something in the background. And up comes this video by Jordan Peterson called On the Necessity of Virtue, one of his older videos. It doesn't have that many views. I think it has about 1 million now.
That's not much.
But that was my first exposure to Peterson, yeah. Where he talks about biology, snakes, yeah. Solzhenitsyn, good and evil, and suddenly he throws in Cain and Abel. And instead of that throwing me off and pushing me away, he constructed it in a psychological way. So he said, okay, here's the story. And this is a story I hadn't thought about since I got out of elementary school. And he said, you know, what Cain basically does is he becomes resentful of what life throws at him instead of meeting it head on and accepting that he's got his cross to bear that wasn't given him because he deserved it. That was just what he got. And instead of looking at what is good around him, which is his brother, he destroys what reminds him of his own failures. So Abel is very much a mirror to him that he then smashes. And then, you know, God is like, why is your face downcast? Sin is crouching at your door, in the way that Peterson described it. Like, that is in that story? This sort of way how you should approach existence? And I'm listening to the entire thing, and I come home and I tell my wife, I don't care what we're watching during dinner as long as it's this video, because you got to watch this.
Put my foot down, watch this.
Right. I want to know what she thought, because I was like, who is this guy, and why don't I know this? Like, it just pulled something open. And so my wife thought, oh, yeah, he's interesting. Yeah, but you know, in this way, like, he's interesting. So I started looking for more content. I found his biblical series, and like, this is interesting. Oh, I had no idea this was in the Bible, and I had no idea that religions were like this, or that they're so much more intertwined with human existence. I mean, do forgive me, but I hadn't really looked at my atheism since I was young. It's just sort of my firmware I ran on without really acknowledging it was there. And I looked for more content. I ended up on the Jordan Peterson subreddit, and that's where Paul comes in, because somebody had linked on the Jordan Peterson subreddit, which back then was pretty good, on a video that Paul had made about the Sam Harris and Peterson debates. Paul, do you remember that video?
I've made a lot of videos about those debates.
The first one, Axiomatic God versus
It was like God number one, God number two. That's where I sort of figured out these two are talking about two different things.
Yeah. Huh.
And I watched that video, and I know exactly where I was. This is always going to sound... I got to be honest about it. I was sitting on the couch in my living room. I was watching this video on the TV. And at some point, there is Brett Weinstein, who was moderating the discussion, who interjects... Where Sam Harris says, oh, you know, this is just God who doesn't want me to masturbate. And Brett says, well, depends on what he's preventing you from doing. Or either Peterson says that or Brett
Peterson
says that. But Brett at some point says, I understand this God that Peterson is talking about. And your commentaries, Paul, were about stories and how people are stories and how, you know, we don't want to throw the old photo books away because we want these stories. And it's like I got poked in the head. Like what I saw, like my vision sharpened. I could focus very clearly, and suddenly I understood the idea of the axiomatic God. Like there is, let's say, for lack of a better word, the loving Father who sort of guides you towards the future that is best for you. And that's God? Well, I get that, and if we're stories, well then, if I'm a story, well then I should, you know, try to make it the best story that's possible, and I think what happened is there suddenly there was a possible future. Like, imagine a young depressed man. I just hoped I would die without too much suffering. You know, despite I was married. That's how destructive this stuff is. Like, you just kind of hope you die without too much hassle. And the only reason I hadn't taken it into my own hands is because of fear, I guess. But suddenly I could see a future of myself where I was like 60 or 70. Like, what is this? I don't know what to do with this, because now I have a responsibility to maybe bring that into being. And I remember asking my wife, like, honey, do I seem okay to you? Am I appearing manic to you? Because she's like, no, you're doing good. Like, something weird's going on with me. I don't know what this is. So I figured, well, I'd better talk to this guy who seems to have caused this partially. So I tracked down his email address. I write him an email. I said, hey, Paul, I think what I said is, would you like to have a conversation? Because I'm having some trouble understanding things, or something like that. And I get this nice email back saying, sure. And then suddenly, you know, there's Paul on your computer screen and he's talking back. And that is the most surreal thing. Because I had consumed hours and hours of his content by then. Like, I'd been driving around in my car, you know, listening to his sermons even. And I just basically told part of this story to Paul. And then the nice thing about Paul is that he'll just listen. Because I look back at that conversation a while ago, you could have cut me off, Paul, at a number of times saying, yeah, you don't get it, or, well, that's just bad theology, or anything like that. And you just listened, and here and there you asked the question if things were unclear, or if you wanted to know something. And I think that's what's so important, is that people can have an honest conversation where they're willing to be vulnerable. Because a lot of what Peterson says is about relationships. It's about stand up straight, be vulnerable, open yourself up to the world, make friends with people who want the best for you, play the long game, you know, don't become resentful. There's so much in there that, because, I mean, I have to credit Peterson. I mean, all the content I listened to by him also really changed my way of thinking about what it is to live. I got to kind of keep the thread of the conversation together. After this, we had a number of other conversations, I think, Paul. And now I find myself here on the West Coast trip in a church's podcast studio. And
what in the world?
It's been a really strange 2 years. It is, I fought this for very hard for a year and a half, because this wasn't just me going in. I mean, a lot of this was like, because Paul said, maybe you should try prayer, or maybe you should try going to church. Like, I'm not going to pray. That's for people who pray. That's what I said, and which implies that I had a certain idea of what people who pray are like, or people who go to church are like. I'm not going to go to church. And Paul's like, well, just try it. What do you got to lose?
Yeah.
And I realized that, well, I'm doing so much better now. Because I noticed that voice in my head had gone eerily quiet. That's also what happened when I watched that video in my living room. The next day I woke up and that voice was gone. And another day, and another day. And it's been about silent for 2 years now. And I had no idea what to do with myself. Because I think it is important if I try to explain how strange this stuff is. So I'm a volunteer firefighter. Then you could ask, why of all things would you do that? That's a different story, because that doesn't run on atheist presumptions of life, I guess. Maybe it does, I'm not sure. But I've been one for about 12 years, and imagine you've done your evening firefighter training.
Right.
You're coming together with your buddies afterwards to have a drink and chat and evaluate. And I'm just sitting there surrounded by people who I consider my friends, and fellow firefighters, and I can't stop thinking, just kill yourself, why are you here? You know, you shouldn't even be here. Why are you a firefighter? You suck at it. Just kill yourself already. And that's not supposed to be the case. You're just sitting there. Why is that going on? There is no reason except for, well, there's something very, very wrong with you. And nowadays. I can't just sit there and laugh and have conversations and concentrate. Like a large thing what that happened is that I went from living in my head, well, we know who else lives in my head, that voice, is I now can aim myself outside and I can aim myself towards the future. And yeah, that's the cliff notes.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
So Paul, and I mean, I'm assuming you get to hear this a bit. You've heard the story already, but I was wondering if you could just reflect a little bit on this friendship and how it developed and how you experienced it, maybe what you've learned from Job in the process and how you've kind of grown in relationship with him. That would be.
Well, one of the things that you might get an inkling of when he tells the story is that Job is incredibly smart. He's incredibly well-read. He listens to all kinds of things, and he's also fiercely honest. And those are qualities that are vital and not found in everyone.
Yeah.
And one of the things that became very interesting was, so I'd had a number of conversations with Job, and he'd kind of been going through his process, and he would tell me things like, you know, well, I don't feel like I can't quite grab God. And I would just laugh because this is the God that grabs you. You can't get your arms around him. But Job would just be very transparent, very honest, but also very thoughtful. And then some people at my local meetup decided they wanted to create an online space that could at least be able to connect people. And they used a Discord server to do that. And very quickly, Job was doing in the Discord server similar to what he and I had done together on the channel. He was having conversations with people, posting it on podcasts. And then everyone starts calling Job the pastor of the Discord server. But I was just tremendously impressed by that. And then I got to meet Job for the first time in person when a year ago, we flew out to Southern California, and we did he was staying with John Dundonk, who's also, you know, who's an immigrant from the Netherlands, and so they share that in common. And I've just, all along, just been tremendously impressed at Job's qualities and the quality of the individual that he is. And in many ways, he does things that I can't do. He just does. But again, I mentioned this in the other podcast that we recorded. As a pastor, these are all things you learn in church.
Right.
Because, oh, you're the pastor of the church. What, I'm supposed to have all the gifts? No. These are the gifts I have. And what God does is bring in others with gifts that I don't have. And I can't tell that story like Job does. That's not my story.
Right.
That's a powerful story. So Job and I have had a number of conversations online. The thing is, though, that I deeply trust Job.
Yeah, that's cool.
Somebody does.
Job,
a lot of people do.
Yeah, and well, clearly, like you've from what I've gathered recently, you've started some community building, some podcasting, some YouTubing of your own, in which people love to talk to you, which is special. And even the YouTube thing I was just listening to, I mean, you know, this is like a flash forward, but I just caught that you're the pastor, so you're now in church, and the pastor of your church had even said, you know, you could probably be an elder. I don't know how long ago that video was, but you had kind of gone, I don't know if I believe, and he said, I think you do. I mean, that's quite the journey, and I know on that video, which is back where you two and John Van Donk and Rod from The Village talked about the type of church that this was that brought you in. So maybe that video is there if you want to go hear a lot about that. But yeah, tell us what it was like to come into church community and to even be affirmed in this journey you've been on there.
Oh boy. a little bit of a disclaimer up front. I was never supposed to become religious.
Yeah.
That was not the plan at all. I still have trouble with that because it's so not what I thought I I would be. And I mean, okay, so I went to church for the first time, I think about a year and a half ago, on Paul's advice, and I went to a church in the tradition that I'd grown up in the village that I now lived, which is not where I grew up. And the joke I like to make is that I was happy to not combust into flames when I walked in. But I sure felt heated,
yeah.
Because, oh boy, I don't know anybody here. My wife went with me, of course. She supports me so much because she sees how, I mean, she's gotten a whole different husband, basically. And so we both went in there. We didn't know anybody. And we sat down, and I remembered some of the dance of the liturgy from my childhood, so I could kind of guide my wife through it. And I didn't like the songs, and I didn't like the sermon, but afterwards there was coffee and chat. I liked that, so I came back. And there was a really good sermon, and I would bring my little journal and make notes and think about it later. And of course that draws people's attention, is the guy taking notes. And then I went a third time, and then people are like, hey, we've seen you here a couple times.
Right.
Would you like to have dinner with us? And sure, why not? And that was sort of the group of people who also have questions and also are not sure. And they come together often, and they cook together, and they eat together. And, you know, at Village Church, know the importance of that. So it becomes a little less awkward, but I still didn't feel that I should be going to church. So I figured, nope, nah, I'm gonna stop this. I'm gonna nip this in the bud before it grows any worse, because at some point I won't be able to contain this anymore. So I figured, okay, I'll just act as if. I'll do my prayer at home. I tried to pray in the evening, as far as I even knew how to do that. And it just got worse. I just noticed I was starting to regress back into my negativities. And I'm just, you know, in the evening sitting on my bed, like kind of how Peterson says, you know, just be really honest and pray, you'll get an answer. And I'm just praying earnestly, like, what should I do? What should I possibly do? And you know, because I don't know any of this works, what should I do? And I just get this very strong impression, I just go to church tomorrow. Like, yeah, but besides that, what could I otherwise do? No, just go to church tomorrow. Fine, so I did. And then the sermon was on Corinthians, with the people asking Paul all the questions, like, well, how does this work with the new body, and how does that work? And I'm like, oh, these people had questions, and they didn't understand how it works. So then I kept going to church, I guess. And I don't know if I could even do without it nowadays, because it's become such a part. But also we had a fairly new pastor to our congregation who actually just sent me a nice message saying, hey, what are you doing? Because he knows I'm over here. And we had him over for coffee, and we talked for 4 hours before we got track of time on, hey, all these things. And he's like, you keep trying to find God rationally, you're not going to get there. It's going to come in through another window. It's just not going to work. We had conversations about all sorts of stuff. And then to tie that back to the Discord, where I started to have these conversations with people, that sort of happened without me. I mean, I didn't instigate that. I just wasn't a voice channel. And somebody called Andreas, who's become a very good friend since, and we've met in real life, and you know, he sent me this lovely rosary that I used to keep focus with using it when I pray. He just started to kind of tell me a story of how he got to this Discord, and how he broke his Catholic faith when he was younger, and how he regained it because Peterson sort of slapped him awake and said, you have a job to do, you have potential to realize. And now he's immersed in this Catholic Church. He's got this beautiful, strong faith that I envy dearly, and we have many good conversations. He's a very smart guy. I loved meeting him in real life, and I would like to do so again. And but then because of that conversation, and I remember all of these people, some people were also coming into this voice channel and listening to us two talking, and then Paul came in, and then Paul's kind of like the signal in the air for all the other people on the Discord, like, oh, there's something going on, let's all barge into that voice channel. But it was beautiful because it was sort of a witnessing moment in that, like, look what Peterson is doing to us, what's going on. And then other people started to have conversations with me, like, can I talk to you? They said, like, sure, what's going on? Okay, I guess I'll just do this then.
Wow.
And I started publishing those on a podcast channel. And eventually I approached my pastor, said, hey, can I do this for this church? I'd love to do this with my congregation here, and then I can meet people, and then I can bring what's in these walls where I would never have looked for what I found there. Maybe I can bring it a bit outside, and then other people can find it at least, and maybe they will try to see what's in here. And
yeah, of course he said no.
No, he loved it.
Yeah. he like Paul Vanderclay went, this is what I've been longing to hear my whole life. Yeah.
My pastor is also really open. Because I remember, like, is it okay if I join the church? Like, I'm basically an atheist. And I said, okay, excuse me. And he said, sure. And I said, I will just not take communion because, you know, I'm not ready for that. And I remember back then he said, yeah, just take your time. I'm not going to pressure you to do that. I'm just happy you're here. And as far as I'm concerned, you already believe. And then he'd see my face. And I go, okay, but, you know, maybe no. No, but he's a great guy. And so he said, sure. He just kind of gave me carte blanche to do that. He rented by the church council, of course, and they were okay with that. So now we have this podcast called Audible Faith, Hoorbaar Geloof. And I just started interviewing members from my congregation who were daring enough to do this. I got transcription services so people could also read it, and I work in digital accessibility, so it's kind of a thing I think is important. And okay, the first one, people were like, what's this, a podcast? I'd never do that. People were really hesitant. But now we're three episodes in, of which two are interviews, and one is like a theological discussion on prayer, and another one on forgiveness, so we're four episodes in. And people are starting to ask me, hey, I'd like to be on there. And then my pastor sends me a text message. Yeah, the largest evangelical media organization of the Netherlands just gave me a phone call and they want to do a thing on a podcast. And I'm like, okay, that's your job. Don't mention me. I'm not ready for that. So it turns out to be a full page item on the podcast.
That's beautiful.
And then people online started to publish news items on it. So we've had some nice exposure. And even my transcription lady wrote me this nice email saying, I love listening to the podcast. Could you guys also talk about this part of forgiveness?
Oh, that's so awesome.
Oh, cool.
I got an email out of the blue that was like a page long from a Christian geologist from the Netherlands who's like, hey, I've listened to your podcast. And I've watched your videos with Paul, and you know, it's so helpful. And it just, I have such a weird life. And again, this was not supposed to happen. So, but at some point, I just sort of had to accept it, you know.
Isn't it great though when you, not that you get the life that you're like, oh, I set out to get this, and look, I got it, but you get the life that you go, this wasn't supposed to be it, but it's good.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Because I had different ideas, and then you know, and God just laughs. But I've had difficult conversations with people who were in my camp.
Yes.
Yeah. A good friend of mine, who's pretty anti-theist, who didn't actually, you know, because I met him after all this. He's like, and he didn't know I was going to church. That was a huge surprise to him because he assumed I was in his camp. As far as there are camps. He said, hey, would you like to go with me to a Richard Dawkins lecture? I'm like, sure. Oh boy, it's so weird to sit on the other side of the river now and looking at it like, no, this, you don't get, no, that's not true at all, or you don't understand this. I'm like, no, and I see myself kind of having switched sides, and it's the weirdest thing. I had very difficult conversations with family, dear to me, who don't understand what's going on. Like, it's not like I do, but everything is better. And like, oh, but are you a Christian? Like, yeah, that's what they ask Peterson, and I understand why he tries to dodge that.
Yeah.
Look, I'll be honest with you, as far as I haven't been. I was attending Village Church service, and there was communion, and I take it in my own church now, and I figured, well, maybe I could do it here, but there was still a part of me that sort of felt uncomfortable with that. But also, I really, really wanted to. Well, I'll just ignore that. But at some point, Rod is giving me a tour of the church, and eventually we end up at that stand again. I couldn't help myself, so I ask Rod, hey Rod, do you mind if I take communion? And Rod, bless him, says, well, why? I'm like, well, that's the point, right? Because there was this difficult question that if you stand with Christ suffering and something, I don't recall exactly, you know, then come forward. And it's such a difficult question, because what does that mean? And but I noticed I really wanted to, and so I just kind of made it more awkward because I couldn't come up with the right answer. And you know, Rob just stands there patiently, and he says, what do you want? I said, well, I just want to, you know, throw a line into the water and see if something bites, if something pulls back from the other side. And he's like, all right, take communion. And I did. And yeah, I don't know why I needed that sort of external verification that it was okay for me to do that. And I don't understand why I wanted to do it in the first place. And still I'm reluctant to call myself a Christian. And still I prefer to call myself a Christian in denial, because I think the moment that I change that I can't go back. And I tried for so long to just remain an atheist and only take the parts that I needed to keep the darkness in my head at bay. And I thought, maybe I can just deal without the metaphysic, but Christianity is such a tar baby, in the sense that as soon as you put one hand in, you're stuck. And
it's a beautiful
thing. Yeah, it's great. It is difficult.
This is good. Yeah. It, and that's how it should feel.
Isn't that terrifying? Isn't it absolutely? Yeah. Because if it's true, then everything matters.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what am I doing with this trip? And because I'd be lying if I said that that just seems to be something that's pushing me there. And then the other part of me is like, no, that's too easy. No, you're willingly doing this. You like this. Like, it's also hugely risky, because I have no idea. I mean, you said you have about 1 million listeners, and here I am, pouring my heart out, not giving poor Paul any speaking time. But because we had a meetup that John Van Donk organized in Chino, and you know, John just does a great job at facilitating these things, and then just he sits there and he pays attention, and then sometimes he steers it a bit, but he's very much just sort of the master of ceremony that stays out of the light, and it brings all these people together. And what I found so strange is that they'd come to me and they'd say, your conversations were so helpful, and I've been trying to figure out why that is. And I think because because I am so open about not understanding most of this,
yeah.
it allows them to yeah. also be vulnerable, because they know that I won't tell them they're wrong or they're stupid or they should read this and this and this book.
Well, I'll tell you my thought on it when I listen to you, and here's just, is that my experience of people is that their nervous systems and their just kind of internal experience of themselves is always out of place of such heightened anxiety. And everyone that they interacts with a shield to protect them so that they won't raise their anxiety and their anxiousness. And your vulnerability stabilizes the room and calms people down, and it's very powerful.
Yeah.
Your willingness to just let it be on the table and be honest, it actually has a powerful impact on people's brains. And
it's the strangest thing, because given how bullied I was as a kid, why would I be this vulnerable? That's dangerous. Mm. Stay out of this. And
sounds like how you feel about Christianity as a whole, like the dangerous thing that you might be called into.
Well, there's the risk that it's true.
Yeah.
And that is such a absolute ripping to shreds of my existing yes. worldview of well, we're just basically higher primates that happen to be self-aware, and we look at that and we're like, oh no. And you know, we don't know why we're here. It seems to be just absurd and an accident. But then the more I think about it, the weirder it gets, because so we're basically a bunch of apes, right? And we eat and we procreate and we dance in the absurdity of it all. And we suffer, of course, don't forget the suffering. And then we look up at the stars above us. First off, we say, this is beautiful, which is the weirdest thing. Why would evolution select for a species that looks at the universe outside of where it is and says, that's beautiful? Then we say, there's this other thing that's circling around our thing. We're gonna take these apes, we're gonna put them in a box we make, and then we're gonna send them to that other one. That is evolutionary, a very bad strategy. The chance that you survive that is very small. So I look at that and I, why would we possibly do that? We are the strangest apes.
Why do we take as many risks as we do?
I know.
Yeah.
And you could, well, evolutionary biology, or evolutionary psychology, sorry. It's like, well, it's the hero's journey, the challenge. Like, okay, yeah, but why is that? Well, to get the group forward, perhaps. But then we also have apes that, you know, take color and put it on something else, and then they show it to some other ape, and that ape goes, whoa! And then the ape gets other apes and says, look what this ape did.
And let's buy that.
Yeah, and then some of them start
a gallery out of the different colors.
Right, and then all these apes come and give bananas to look at what the one
like
ape made.
Inordinate amounts of bananas.
Right.
Yeah.
And then certain amounts of what the one ape made, we bring with us to the other thing where we send the other apes and we put it there.
Yes. On a stick.
We are the weirdest things. And the more I think about that, like, that is just, it's bizarre. It doesn't make sense at all in any of the atheist narratives, because then we, I'm going to go all Nietzschean. How much time do we have?
Not much.
We're close.
You know where I'm going with this, so I'll cut it off here.
I actually, this is an interesting thing that entered my mind, because Paul, this whole Jordan Peterson conversation that brought you two together, interestingly, you end up having a conversation with Jordan Peterson, or at least one, right?
Yeah.
What do you think, like, here you are hearing this story of Job, and your video had something to do with it, which is crazy, right?
Yeah.
And then Jordan Peterson, here's this guy who you were sharing last night just about his own personal trials and troubles at the meetup. And from talking to him, you know, what was it like to talk to a guy who is like, wow, this big thing that once was your conversation starter, now you're talking to the human being who somehow catalyzed what you know, some of what Job is talking about, and the fact that you got into all this, and you know, what's it like to realize the impact we have on one another through things like
I keep coming back to this. If you're a pastor, none of this is, the YouTube stuff is new. The scale can be new if you're a small church pastor, but the experience isn't new.
Yeah.
You preach a sermon, someone comes and, you know, after every sermon, you always do this kind of self-critique. Did this go well? Did this not go well? My self-critique seldom relates to others' critiques. Sometimes
it's often it does. Opposite. It's
often opposite.
Way, yeah.
And then after the service, someone comes up to you and says, "Oh, Pastor, that really changed my life." I'm thinking, huh? It did. And then if you pursue it, say, "Well, what exactly did you find so meaningful?" And then they tell you something that you realize maybe you didn't say, or maybe even yes. It's something you never would have said. And so then you say, you don't want to draw too much attention to yourself, so you just thank them.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, don't I've had it, this exact experience
don't make
so
big,
many times.
So thank you.
Yeah.
But you realize that, yeah, this is not me doing this.
This is beyond me.
As delighted and as full of myself as I could get for having been able to participate in a positive change in Job's life, you know, it's so much beyond me. And at this point, you begin to realize that if you don't believe in a God, you have no one to thank for the audacity of the moment.
Yeah.
And so, but as a pastor, again, this happens regularly. Just now it's happening across an ocean.
And it happened through media.
Yeah.
I love that. I thought you might go there, and that's, I love that, because it is audacious that the thoughts we have that we might share on a video just to get them out there or to process our own thinking could be useful to another person in another country who's thinking. And again, which speaks of, like, what are we dealing with here that's connecting all the dots?
You know, it seems interesting to me, it's not a pushing back against, well, you keep going back to being a pastor and what to expect, but this whole process is a discipleship in a form I've never seen, and it's almost more ancient, and that in some ways you have this metaphorical everybody sitting around around Jesus or the disciples, only now it's in a bigger sense, but
in
the really,
Areopagus of some form, yeah.
But you have a consistent conversation with a purpose and a direction and an interaction with ideas with some expected application, with some expected, you need to go do something with this beyond this conversation. You have the implications of what you're talking about force people to try to integrate it into their life. It's discipleship in a way that we're not doing in the church. You know, your people aren't, they're going to a Sunday school, I suspect, and they're hearing you on Sunday, but they're not integrating their life on a regular, going to bed with you, I mean that in the nicest sense, right?
And we land the podcast on...
who is going to bed with Pastor Paul? I assure you, it is only my wife.
And this is why he's on his fifth journey. Get away. No, I mean, in a serious sense, though, it's like, it's not just you. I mean, now it's all of these. It's created this space where people sit at the feet of Jordan Peterson. They sit at your feet in ways that we're not doing in the church. I don't think it's at the same.
American media has been discipling Americans for a very long time.
I don't disagree with that, yeah.
Just we as the church haven't participated as much with it, yeah.
I guess I'd argue the depth of what you are talking about and the way you're engaging is not something we've been doing.
Yeah.
That's it's unusual. And I think part of this has to do with the reason Christian movies are often so bad.
Yes.
Because what the church has done is said, well, here's a new medium to close the deal with people. So this is what you need to know. This is how you need to respond, and then you're going to have these outcomes.
Yes.
And on a vast scale, people have looked at that and said, well, I heard what you said I needed to know. I did what you said I needed to do, but my outcomes have not been the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And again, we know this in church too. Pastor, you told me this and it didn't happen.
Right.
And we're mimicking advertising, you know, but advertising is saying this window cleaner cleans your windows and doesn't leave streaks, and the people do it and they go, oh, look, there aren't streaks. And so that's appropriate.
That's right.
But when we try to mimic that with, you know, a thing that was never supposed to work that way,
right.
You know, but then the rest of the world's media has found space to connect and talk and be vulnerable. And what you discovered and stumbled into here is that we as Christians can be present there, and that's not an inauthentic place.
Right.
That, yeah.
I'd agree.
Well, we probably better wrap her on up because I think...
My counseling canceled.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're sick with the plague, they said.
Oh, my goodness. I do have to be
not
somewhere.
Not that plague.
The nice but, plague.
The nice plague.
Thank
common
you.
Common plague.
Thank you, guys. Joe, especially. I want to echo what Eric said, that your calm honesty is a real gift, and I can see why people want to hear your story and follow you, though I know that's an uncomfortable thing to imagine. But
you should see my face.
but really, it's a gift, so thanks. And Paul, thanks for sharing a bit about your journey, and John, who's sitting in the background, hi, over there. And yeah, really, really good to have you. And of course, you can tune in to Paul Vanderclay on his YouTube channel and hear more of these discussions. And then Job, Audible Faith.
Yeah, but it's in Dutch.
It's in Dutch. So if you know Dutch out there, there's a great
bless
podcast
you.
For you.
Keep the Dutch language alive.
Yeah, keep it alive.
There is a transcript for each episode that you could run through a translation service if you were so inclined.
Okay, there you go. So follow up with those things, and thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you. This is Faith Over Breakfast. My name is Eric Siepen, and I'm sitting across from Andy Littleton from Mission Church. I'm
hello.
From the Village, and we just have been sitting here for hours doing podcasts.
Went on our longest podcast marathon, which is about the length of a Paul Vanderclay regular video.
Yeah,
and we have,
if we put the two together.
That very man, the pink unicorn himself, Paul Vanderclay and his friend Job, here with us for this podcast, which
is awesome.
And here's
the thing, Job is such an iconic person that he only goes by his Job. Like, I don't know his last name. Everyone else is like, you know, Paul Vanderclay. It's just Job. It's like...
There is a book in the Bible
which
is not at all associated with this man. But it's... But, you know, if that guy can go by Job, he can go by Job. What's your last name, Job?
Van Achterberg, which means from behind the mountain, which is particularly ironic given I'm from the Netherlands. The highest point is 1,000 feet, and we're very proud of it.
Thanks, Napoleon, for that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, the conversation is especially interesting. I really encourage you to tune in because you're hearing Job's story, especially, and then Paul's story of getting to know Job. Eric and I have the pleasure of getting to, you know, nod in agreement and say that was awesome, and that's exactly what we were hoping to do, because we want you to hear this story of how Paul's YouTube channel and Jordan Peterson's stuff online ended up meeting Job over in the Netherlands and has led to, you know, all kinds of interesting things that are interesting, surprising, really meaningful. So tune in and hear the story, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, so this doesn't need to be on any podcast, but for your own interest, this is what happened. So I had done a video with Paul prior.
Yeah.
And had identified myself as Dutch. When Job did the interview with Paul, he said, and say these Dutch words to John.
That was about my third video.
Well, third, whatever, third video. But he said, and then I got a message from Paul, it says, listen to this particular video with Job van Achterberg, and then there's a message there for you.
Yeah.
So I read the message, then I contacted him on YouTube, got his email address or however that went, and I said, if you are ever in Southern California, feel free to look me up. I'll give you a tour of California and take you to meet Paul.
Oh, fun.
2 weeks later, he was in my house.
There he was.
2 weeks later?
Yeah.
No, I had to be here for a conference.
You were coming, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cool. I'm speaking at the same conference again this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so that set a kind of a precedence of our being together, and even this trip kind of got organized around Joe's schedule for his conference, and that was a nice confluence of circumstances. But again, not something you can orchestrate.
No.
You know, there's no way you can... I don't know.
The fact that the people that he ends up interacting with are close by to where he's going to be. In like, it's not like you flew into Rhode Island.
Oh, the Dutch are saving the world.
Yeah.
Really.
I mean, so it would seem.
The Dutch are saving the world.
Hey,
well, we're the only ones who can.
Yeah.
You're not Dutch, you're not Dutch.
Oh, he had to say that.
Oh, North Sea, you don't want to give this land. Well, too bad, we're going to take it anyway. Yeah.
Oh, the Dutch.